One of the things I wanted to accomplish in moving back to my hometown was to tell some of the people from my past about my alien experiences. I knew it would be difficult and that I was setting myself up for ridicule, but I needed to take the step. On my way to the Johnson home, I decided that I would tell them about my interactions with the aliens. I wanted to be honest with them and was as prepared as I would ever be for their reaction. After an hour of us all playing catch-up, I felt it was time to begin to tell them my story. I began by asking them to allow me to tell them the whole story before asking me questions, otherwise I may never get to the end. Shortly after I began, they interrupted and told me they believed me. It helped me to relax as I wanted to tell them everything I could in the short amount of time I had. After 2 hours of me recounting highlights of my alien interactions, Catherine took me by surprise. When I was very young, the Johnson family lived down the street from our family. The community we lived in was very small, and I have memories of many of the families in the area. Catherine began to tell me she remembered one of the area residents telling anyone who would listen about seeing a UFO hovering over the field in front of our home. Apparently, he talked about the UFO sighting for years. No one ever listened to him because he was an alcoholic. Everyone thought he was seeing things. When Catherine told me this, I asked her if she remembered what year it was. After some thought, she told me, to the best of her knowledge, the year was 1970. I had the sensation of tingling all over my body after I listened to Catherine's story about the UFO. For years I wasn't clear on whether I was 4 or 5 years old. Now, there I was, finally having another person confirm my age. I was very happy about this new piece of information and shared my excitement with Catherine and James. I told them this was the information I had been looking for in order to pinpoint the date of the alien encounter as a child. It was amazing how much of that particular night was clear to Janice and myself. Our memories were identical, and now there I was, 36 years later, finding more corroborating evidence of the events of that fateful night. I knew now that I was 4 years old at the time of their encounter. Andy's knowledge meant that Helen could better guide Janice in recovering her memory. Catherine and James shared their views and beliefs about UFOs and aliens with me after listening to the end of my story. I was overwhelmed by their openness and acceptance of me because they were important to me. I had a great deal of respect and gratitude for everything they had done for me as a child. If they had thought I was crazy, it would have made me very sad. Now I felt as though I could be myself and share my life with them without hiding anything. After hours of talking about the aliens, I had to be on my way. As I left the Johnson home, I hugged both Catherine and James, telling them how much it meant to me that they accepted me and, more importantly, that they had accepted my alien story. I left with feelings of excitement and relief, excited that I had one more piece of the puzzle in finding the buried object. Relief at their acceptance. The following day, I called Janice and told her about my conversation with the Johnsons. We talked about that night as children out in the farmer's field. We both remember feeling as though the world around us was sleeping, as though not even the creatures were moving that night. So why did this man remember seeing the UFO? The only logical conclusion was that maybe he was so drunk at the time that the aliens couldn't put him to sleep. Janice was pleased at knowing the year in which my abduction took place. Now we could call Helen and set up the appointment for the hypnosis sessions. When I called Helen, she told me it would have to wait at least 2 weeks. After 36 years of waiting, what was a few more months? There was no rush for us, since it would be months before we could begin digging. The earth needed to soften enough to begin working with it, as it was early fall. And that meant we would have to wait until spring to begin the search. In the meantime, all we could do was wait. A week later, Janice called me in the late afternoon. A friend of ours, Kelly, who had lost a loved one the year prior, was asking if the two of us could go with her to spread his ashes in a special place. I had received messages from her partner in the previous year and passed them on to her. For this reason, she asked me to participate in the ceremony. An hour later, Janice arrived to pick me up with Kelly and her sister Yolanda. The four of us began our drive out of town on the highway. The night darkness was creeping in, and as it did, I began to gaze out the window of the truck. As usual, I was looking for the stars to come out and say hello to the world. I thought, hashes would be the perfect opportunity for them to show themselves to Janice, since we are going out to the middle of nowhere and no one will be around. I kept that thought for the next hour as we drove, leaving civilization behind, heading into the back country. It would be a good idea for Janice to see you again. We are going to do a ceremony and you must not interrupt it, but it would be good if you showed yourselves tonight. I kept this as my mantra for the rest of the drive. After an hour and a half, we finally arrived at our destination. The truck stopped beside a riverbank and we all stepped out. I looked upward and around. I could see a ridge of mountains and hills that surrounded the area, and it was very dark. The stars were now out in full force, and it was really beautiful to see them twinkle in the night sky. Kelly left the truck rather quickly and walked to the river's edge. She was crying heavily, and we all let her go off on her own. I said to Janice, "Don't be surprised if you see them tonight. I just wanted to let you know they may show themselves, and if they do, don't freak out." We were at the site for less than 5 minutes when Yolanda began to holler, "Oh my God, look! It's a UFO." She turned to us and pointed to the orb moving across the sky. Janice and I just looked at each other, smiled and shrugged our shoulders. In my mind, I said thank you to them and then said aloud, "Will you stop for us for a minute? Or will you at least slow down for us?" As I said that, they slowed but kept moving. Yolanda couldn't believe what she saw. The star orb looked like a ball of light low in the sky, passing over us with no sound at all. Yolanda kept asking if we saw it, wondering why we weren't jumping up and down with her over the sighting. She was taken aback because the orb appeared to listen to my request to slow down. Both Janice and I told Yolanda we did see it and that it didn't freak us out. We were very casual about it. At that moment we heard Kelly crying, and we all dropped the UFO talk and decided it was time to go to her. As we did, I said thank you to them again for showing themselves. I was happy the aliens sent a probe to us, and I kept an eye on the sky in case they came again. I repeated in my mind that they were not to interrupt this ceremony because it was sacred. They couldn't overshadow the purpose of us being there. The three of us stood at the riverbank as Kelly stood in the water talking through her tears about her loved one. She then released his ashes into the river. By this time we were all in tears. As Kelly walked back to shore, we walked towards her and all began holding hands, standing in a circle. As the four of us stood in the darkness, we bowed our heads and each of us said a few words of goodbye. I opened my eyes and looked up. As I did, I could see two balls of light coming towards us. It was two more orbs. I quickly said clearly and sternly in my head, "You must go back. You must not interrupt this ceremony. It is sacred to us and it is not right for you to come at this moment." The one orb farthest away blinked to black and the one closest to us stopped and then began to travel back to where it came from. I thanked them once again in my mind for leaving, and my focus went back to the group. When we all finished speaking, we made our way back to the truck. It was very cold and was getting late. I had to go to the washroom before we headed back, so I went to the back of the truck to do my business. As I did, I tried to keep my eyes on the skies. Very quietly, I asked them to do a flyby with the craft. No one was around and I wanted to see them. Who knows when the next time I may be in such a remote area. As I stood up, I looked directly above me. "Wahoo!" I yelled. From one mountain ridge on the left of me to the other mountain ridge on the right was a huge streak of orange light. It was so fast and wide it was amazing. It had to be at least 100 feet across. There was no way it was a meteor. It was too low, too big, and went from ridge to ridge with no sound, not the normal path of a meteor. I felt blessed and again I thanked them for showing themselves to me. I walked to the front of the truck where Janice, Kelly and Yolanda were talking. I asked them if they saw the streak of light, but none of them had. I wasn't surprised since it happened in the blink of an eye and was silent, but I was also sad they hadn't seen anything. In another moment we were all back in the truck and heading back to town. The next day I told Janice that the appointment with Helen was coming up and asked her if she was still okay with having the hypnosis. She told me she was up to the task and, if anything, seeing the UFO made her even more comfortable with the whole idea. It seemed as though the days flew by and before I knew it the day arrived for Janice to have her hypnosis session. When we went to see Helen she asked to talk with Janice alone. When they came out of the room Helen said that she and Janice felt it was best that I waited in another room. After the hour session was over, Janice came out and told me she didn't really get anywhere. No memories came up that were of any help. Not having any answers after one day was not a surprise. It took another two sessions before Janice and Helen exited the hypnosis room with solid results. Helen in particular was excited by the memories she was able to uncover. I was led into the room and sat in preparation for the great revelation. Janice and Helen said the object was indeed moved. Janice remembered removing it from the spot I buried it to show a friend of hers. It was then taken by Janice's childhood friend. After recovering the object, Janice then reburied it within feet of where I had originally put it. The only thing she did differently was bury it deeper than it had been previously. And this was great news. The three of us were related. Now all I had to do was wait until spring to begin the search. I was excited to know where it was and couldn't wait until I could begin digging. I asked Janice to come with me to the site so we could get a feel for the area. When we pulled up to the spot my heart sank as I gazed at the land in front of me. It was completely different from when we were children and it was immediately obvious that this task would be much harder than I had anticipated. Janice and I walked around the area and tried to remember the exact spot we had left the object. The earth was not as it had been when we were children. A building that once stood on the property was no longer there and a bulldozer had pushed the soil around. No matter, I kept telling myself, I will find it. After all, why would everything in my life have happened the way it had if I wasn't meant to find the alien gift? Janice and I agreed that above all else, we had buried something and I was resolved to finding it. All I needed was determination and, oh yeah, maybe a miracle. At the end of 2005 I was waiting for the new year to bring spring and begin to soften the earth. In the meantime I focused on the book so I would be prepared for anything that could happen if, and when, I found the alien object. As 2006 came into view I felt time inch closer to the day I could break ground and search the earth for the alien gift. Everything seemed to be coming into place and it was only a matter of time before I found what I was looking for. On several occasions I went searching for the object. On a few of those days Janice came with me as the two of us searched together. Unfortunately, the year passed with no results, but that wouldn't deter me. Many obstacles came in my path in 2006, preventing me from spending much time at the site. I saw it as a sign that maybe it was too early. Once again, I needed to sit back and wait for the right time to begin the work again. In the meantime I would focus on the book and keep my heart open for the aliens to guide me if that was what was needed. With everything that told me my memories were true, from Janice, my father, the Hopi, Catherine, Harold, and many others, I knew I could never turn my back on any of this. It is impossible for me to do any such thing. So no matter how long it takes I will continue my work in service for the aliens whom I have come to know as the caretakers. I will also continue my search for the object and the complete truth to everything I have experienced. Puzzle pieces. Intentions. I wrote this book because of a direct request from the aliens in 1988 to do so. They asked me to educate people as to who they are and what their message to the world is. Due to many factors, it has taken a long time for me to begin this task for them. Whenever I thought about beginning the book, it never felt right. Until now. The reason I chose to write this book in the style that I have, laying out the events that took place rather than rushing straight to their message, is simple. In order for you, the reader, to begin to listen to their messages, you need to first accept that UFOs and aliens do indeed exist. The reality of the aliens must first become, At the very least, a possibility in your mind in order for the messages to have any impact on you, the reader. I have attempted to show you some of the experiences I have in my life in relation to the aliens. My intention was to show you some of the moments that shaped my perceptions. I have shared a glimpse into my world. Everything I have shared with you is factual and the complete truth. I have attempted to demonstrate how these sometimes small events changed my life. How and why I have come to the conclusions I have is laid out in my story. When you begin to research on your own, and I hope you do, don't let the ridiculous overtake you. If something doesn't feel right, then don't believe it. Listen to your instinct and allow that to guide you in your search for more information. Keep as close to the mainstream in as possible, as this is where you will find more consistency and accuracy. Don't think you need to believe everything you read. There are people that use the UFO and alien concept for attention and/or security in their lives. Ufology is like society, it contains all walks of life, from the rational and believable to the mentally unstable. The more ridiculous the story is, the less believable it becomes. Look for simple answers when beginning your own search for answers. There has been a great deal of conversation throughout the UFO community over the many different types of aliens that people claim contact this planet. It can become very confusing and even annoying when attempting to learn information about the different alien races to those in search of more information. Don't allow this confusion to distract you from finding the truth. Somewhere in all the hype, misinformation, and the ridiculous, you will find real and honest answers. You will find evidence to support the claims of sightings and abductions all around the world from before the birth of Jesus Christ. The beings I have had encounters with are about 7 to 8 feet tall, and have blonde hair and blue eyes. They are sometimes referred to as the blondes or tall blondes. These beings are the focus of this book and it is their messages I carry. They go by many different names in the UFO community, but by putting any further labels on them I find they then take on the blanket of information that has already been written about them. Since some of the information that has been presented to me over the years about one type or another of aliens I have not always agreed with, I prefer not to label them any further. The messages they gave me in the past and still give me to this day are of peace, love and balance. I truly believe with all my being that these aliens have our best interest at heart. They have never asked me to do anything that would harm another person in any way. They have instructed me to teach others about them, respect the earth and all that lies upon it. They have instructed me to obey the laws of the land and its people. And dear, message is not about disregarding the world. Rather, it is about respect and living in harmony with it. Everything I have shared with you comes from my own experiences and direct knowledge of them. I never have and never will pass on information learned from other sources as being my own. Why did I write this book now as opposed to any other time? The world is on the verge of a great change and it is time to prepare. We no longer have the luxury of time on our side. We have affected the earth in such a negative way that she has begun to shake us off her. The prophetic messages the aliens asked me, as well as many others, to share with the world are now relevant. The signs that the end is near have begun to be seen and recognized: climate change, world unrest, complete disregard for fellow man and disconnect from the earth itself. Until recently, the warnings and words of the aliens would not have been listened to at all. The work of many people who have come before me, educating the world about the alien presence, has laid the groundwork upon which I and people like myself can build. If I had tried to tell this story before now, it would have been pointless. We are moving into a very important time on the planet. Our actions in the immediate future will dictate our fates as to whether or not we will survive and go on as a species. What happened in the hours after encounter in 1988 started me on a journey to find truth, peace, acceptance and understanding. Some of the time I spent with the aliens that day was clear in my mind from that moment forward. Other parts would take weeks, months and even years to become clear. The events that transpired, as well as what I was shown and told inside the craft that fateful day, changed my life forever. I can never again look at the world with the same ignorant eyes. Once you know the truth, it can never be taken away or erased. It swims in your soul and nothing or no one can change it. Pandora's box opened and it can never be closed. When the aliens shared information with me, they gave me the gift of experiencing it as well. In other words, when I was shown a picture of being on board a craft hovering above thousands of people with their arms reaching upward, screaming for help after a disaster hit the Earth, I was there. The actual experience of that event was given to me. It is for this reason that these experiences and interactions with the aliens are so real and affect people so deeply. Imagine living another life and having all those experiences placed within you. As an example, you can read books about rock climbing, watch documentaries on it, listen to your friends as they tell you about their experiences climbing, but until you actually do it yourself, you haven't experienced it. Well, this is what the aliens do. Not only do they give you the gift of knowledge of rock climbing, but the gift of the experience of it as well. I am not sure how this is accomplished, but I do know it is the reason the information we are told makes it next to impossible to ignore their warnings. We change our lives because we cannot turn our backs on what we know to be the truth. People who have had these extraordinary interactions with aliens will almost always completely change their lives after the event, as they are compelled to follow the instructions given to them, live good lives, take care of the earth and live in harmony with all things. We are told to respect all that we have, our food, water and this world. We are told our bodies as well as our spirits are sacred and to be mindful that our lives should not be taken for granted. A question that I have been asked on many occasions is, why do you believe you were chosen to receive these messages? There are many reasons I may have been chosen, and all of them are only speculation on my part. It is my understanding that the aliens helped to create us. I am not in any way implying that I think the aliens are God, but I do believe, and was told by them, that they had a hand in creating humankind. And this takes me to what people often refer to as a possible genetic program being done by the aliens. It could be that there are certain families throughout the planet that the aliens have always monitored since of humankind in an attempt to modify, and possibly introduce, new genetic strands of DNA into the world. As I have made clear in my writing, my father has had contact for most of his life with these same alien beings. It is understandable to assume that this is a strong reason for my initial contact. The reason I have received so many messages and seen them so many times over my lifetime could possibly be because something within my very soul is strong enough to process the information and still remain rational. With each contact, I was able to process the data given to me with an exceptional amount of clarity, and so they decided to keep giving me more. And it seems to be true with most people in contact with the tall blondes. The more information you are able to process and can accept, the more they will share with you. Was I chosen or did I volunteer? Why was I chosen? Any answer to these questions is only speculation and really have no bearing on the fact that remains. We are not alone. Can anyone have these experiences? I would imagine that if the situation was right and the timing was right, anyone could be chosen to see the aliens in their physical form. They can be reached through meditation as well. Often this is how they will keep in contact with those who have been taken by them in the physical form. And those people who have contact with the aliens through meditation can only receive messages as clear as their mind. Messages sometimes do not get through our personal filters clearly, and so it is important to always remain objective, even with yourself. In early 1990, I decided not to read other people's interpretations on this subject so that my mind would remain clear on what took place on the craft that day in 1988. I found it difficult to imagine listening to a researcher explain to me why I had these experiences, and even more difficult to imagine listening to another person's interpretations of my experiences. After all, the experiences were mine, a gift to me. If I can't remember part of my experience, why would I accept another person telling me what happens to fill in the gaps? And it is not at all logical. Ufology was an obscure subject in 1988 for the general public. I feel comfortable with all the knowledge the aliens gave me as being the truth and my memories as clear and correct because of this. Over the years I have read very few books and listened to even fewer speakers talk about the subject in any detail. I try to limit my exposure to them so my memories remain as clear and uninfluenced as possible. Even when I went to the UFO conferences in 1991 and 2005, I rarely listened to the speakers. My focus was, and always is, on the people who attended these types of functions. I find the people are the reason for the gatherings to take place. It is in the personal interactions with people we find others who are like-minded and or have had contact from the same group of aliens. It is remarkable how the messages given to so many people around the world are often identical. The information that is remembered by a person who has had contact can contain the same phrase regarding a particular piece of information. For example, the phrase, "Now is the time," seems to be synonymous with many initial contacts. Others, who have had contact with the tall blondes, receive messages that are geared towards preparations in the event of a sudden global change. The details of this information are also often identical. The messages the aliens bring that affect people to the core of their beings are some of the most important aspects to this phenomenon. For example, many people are told specifically that in the end times the Four Corners area will be one of the safe lands. Others, since my experience in 1988, I have had the ability, at times, to be able to recognize others who have had genuine experiences, not just at obvious events like the UFO conferences, but in my daily life as well. I have recognized complete strangers as fellow experiencers a number of times at bars, coffee shops and bookstores. I could share several examples of this but have chosen the following two to share with you. I don't always tell the person of my recognition, but on every occasion I have, it has proven to be correct. One day in Vancouver I went into a bookstore to see what kind of books were being written about aliens. I never read them, but seeking out these types of books gives me an idea of what kind of information is now being released to the general public. It lets me know what pieces of the puzzle they have been fitting together lately. Normally I only read the cover to get an idea of what the book is about. There was a man who appeared to be a street person looking at the books when I arrived. He didn't see me but I smiled. I knew he had had contact with aliens. He put the book down and stepped back. I then picked up the same book he had just had in his hand. As he moved away, he said, "It's all real, you know." "Yes, I know," I replied as I looked at him and smiled. He smiled back. As he walked away he said, "Good. Another one of us." We recognized each other and knew that we were both awake to the knowledge that we are not alone. We recognized the alien contact in each other and acknowledged it. Another incident that demonstrates this recognition we have with each other took place in another bookstore. Two blocks from the store I heard a voice in my head, "Hasher is someone you will meet in the store that will be important to you." When I entered the bookstore I went to look over the new books that came in and kept my eyes open. I didn't know who I might be looking for but I kept my heart and mind open to possibility. After about half an hour of browsing the book aisles I decided to check out the music section. The moment I rounded the corner I looked up and there she was. "She has had a lot of contact," I thought, "and I need to talk to her. I would be surprised if she was not fully awake to her experiences. I must not leave until I talk with her." Not only did I recognize the woman across the room to have had contact, but I also knew it was with the tall blondes. Now the real question was how I would start a conversation with her. After the initial moment of recognition I realized she was an employee. As I walked towards her she looked at me, smiled and said hello. Her name tag said Alma. Before I had time to think, we were engaged in conversation about a piece of spiral jewelry for sale. We discovered it was the spiral symbol we were both attracted to. It was a great way to begin a conversation with Alma and I quickly found her to be a very friendly and interesting woman. I knew I needed to ask her to meet with me for a coffee so we could talk further, but how would I do that? I didn't want her to think I was strange. Our conversation touched on the Hopi people, but neither of us mentioned aliens or UFOs. We both had deep connections to the Four Corners area, and this helped convince me she had had alien contact. I walked to the cash register and she went with me to put my purchases through. She was bold enough to say she thought maybe we should get together sometime and talk. It seemed that we had many of the same interests.